2 weeks ago, I emailed Karen, our music director, and let her know that I would be preaching on Joseph this morning, at which point Karen began searching for music about him. A few days later, I received this reply from her. "Dear Richard, after some diligent research, I can affirm that Joseph doesn't get much attention in the larger world of hymnody or in Advent anthems for choirs." At which point I began counting. Between the blue and the black hymnals, I counted 99 Advent and Christmas hymns. Only one of them features Joseph. It is seldom, if ever, sung. We're going to try it in just a few minutes. It is based on a nativity play that dates way back to the 1600s. Sadly, after all these years, it has never made it to the top 100. So Quiet Joseph truly is the unsung hero of the Bible. Why is that? Well, did you happen to notice in the story I just read that Joseph never speaks? Mary spoke twice in last week's story. "How can this be, for I am a virgin? Let it be according to your will, O God." But this week, Joseph, our main character, never opens his mouth. I found that unusual, so I did a little research and discovered that Joseph does not have a single recorded word in the entire Bible. Perhaps this is the reason Joseph has always been a bit player or a background prop in children's nativity pageants. Someone who is way, way less popular than the shepherds and, yes, even the sheep. I am reminded of that funny little book, The Best Christmas Pageant Ever. In one of the scenes, the director is trying to recruit a child to be Joseph. "Does anyone want to volunteer to be Joseph?" the director asks. No one did. No one ever did. Especially not Elmer Hopkins. But he couldn't do anything about it because he was the minister's son. Well, one year Elmer didn't volunteer to be Joseph, and neither did anyone else. And afterward, I heard Reverend Hopkins talking to Elmer out in the hall. "You're going to be Joseph," Reverend Hopkins said. "That's it, end of story." "I don't want to be Joseph," Elmer told him. "I'm too big. I feel dumb up there. And all those little kids give me a pain in the neck." "I can understand that," Reverend Hopkins said. "I can even sympathize with you. But until somebody else volunteers for Joseph, you're stuck with it." To which Elmer replied, "Then I'm going to have to be Joseph for the rest of my life." I'm going to have to be Joseph for the rest of my life. That's not such a bad thing. In fact, I would suggest to you this morning, it is a high and holy calling. So who exactly was this quiet, unsung person named Joseph? What is his backstory? Joseph was born in Bethlehem, a small town 6 miles out of Jerusalem. At some point, he moved to Nazareth, likely because there was more work there. He read Hebrew and spoke Aramaic. He also hailed from the house of David. Today, that would be the equivalent of being a descendant from one of the Roosevelts or the Kennedys. While he was working in Nazareth, he met Mary. Perhaps he did a small carpentry job for her family. Perhaps it was there that she caught his eye. Joseph would have been around age 20 at the time, and Mary as young as age 14. One day, Joseph appears at Mary's door with a gift and asks for her hand in marriage. Her parents joyfully accept. Mary may or may not have been consulted. After that, both families went to the rabbi, and in the presence of two witnesses, they executed a formal contract. From that day on, Mary and Joseph were engaged, which meant they were permitted to see each other and be seen together in public. And then it happens a few weeks later, Mary turns up pregnant. Joseph is heartbroken. Why did she? How could she? But Joseph, the Bible says, was a righteous man. Now, rabbinic law stated that Mary's unfaithfulness should be reported to the scribes and the Pharisees. And according to the contract, infidelity was punishable by public stoning. And yet, even though it was the legal thing to do, Joseph does not expose Mary to public disgrace. This righteous man chooses to do what is right over what is legally correct and vows to annul the engagement quietly. I would submit to you this morning that that word quietly is the key to this entire passage. Quiet Joseph working behind the scenes saves Mary's life. Later that night, he has a dream. An angel, a messenger appeared to him and said, "Do not be afraid. Go ahead and take Mary to be your wife. It is all part of God's great plan." The next morning, Joseph wakes up and he quietly takes Mary as his lawful wife. So what's the takeaway from the Joseph story? What does it have to do with our lives? Who does quiet Joseph, the silent supporting actor in the greatest story ever told, stand for? I say let him stand for the millions and millions of men and women who are just like him. People who spend their entire life working quietly in the background. People who are just as important and sometimes more important as the ones who have all the speaking parts. Every church, including this one, would cease to function without them. The volunteers who quietly serve on committees as deacons, soup kitchen liaisons, crypt tour guides, shut-in visitors, holiday decoration teams, and a massive construction project. Our country would cease to function without all the Josephs as well. Men and women who quietly work behind the scenes every day doing incredibly important work. Cybersecurity experts, airplane mechanics, anesthesiologists, structural engineers, government interpreters, sewage treatment workers, nuclear power plant employees, war photographers, Navy SEALs. And this, stay-at-home mothers and fathers working quietly alone while their spouses take center stage in the working world. And let us not forget all those quiet behind-the-scenes men and women in the world of science. I started thinking about this the other day, and this question came to my mind. A decade from now, when we look back at the birth of the coronavirus vaccine, what nativity players will be on the stage? Surely front and center, we will see the people with the speaking parts, Dr. Fauci, Sanjay Gupta, Rochelle Walensky. But what about the people way in the back of the stage who are not under the spotlight, who did not have a public speaking part? Will we see or even remember them? Enter Catalin Carrico. She is an American immigrant. She grew up in a two-room adobe house in a small village in Hungary. Her father was a butcher, her mother a bookkeeper. There was no running water, no television, and no refrigerator. When she was in college, she worked in a biological research lab. In graduate school, she started working with the RNA molecule, which she became completely obsessed with. When the lab Catalin worked in lost its funding, she looked for an opportunity in the United States. She was accepted to a postdoctoral position at Temple University. So the family sold their car on the black market and bought one-way tickets to the U.S. And they smuggled all the money they had inside a big brown teddy bear with red-rimmed eyes. A seam runs down its back where Catalin performed the surgery. She keeps it in her daughter's childhood room to this day. In 1989, Catalin got a job at Penn State Medical School. She continued to perfect her RNA research, while many of her peers believed it was going absolutely nowhere. And thank God, during this time, she met another Joseph, a reserved immunologist named Drew Weissman. And quietly working together in a small laboratory behind the scenes, they developed and modified the RNA that was essential for the coronavirus vaccine. Now, how ironic is that? At the same time, there was a huge backlash about immigrants coming to the U.S. One of them was quietly working backstage in a lab developing a vaccine that would save millions and millions of American lives. So let Joseph stand for all these quiet, unsung heroes. People who spend their life working backstage in the background, making a huge, huge difference. So whatever happened to quiet Joseph? Well, truthfully, nobody really knows. After his debut in today's opening act, he is written completely out of the pageant. And I'm guessing that's because the biblical writers wanted to emphasize Jesus as God's only son. Having Joseph appear on the stage after Jesus' birth would complicate things. But Joseph was still Jesus' earthly father. No one could take that away from him, no amount of biblical redaction. And I would argue that he was the one who taught Jesus not only Hebrew and Aramaic, but the ethics of compassion and righteousness. Now, I have no way of proving my theory. However, later on in the Gospels, an incident takes place that makes me wonder. Jesus is on the Mount of Olives. A crowd of people have gathered around to hear him preach. The scribes and the Pharisees came too. And they brought with them a woman who was accused of adultery. She was trembling and weeping. "Teacher," they said to Jesus, "the law of Moses commands us to stone this woman. So what do you say?" Hearing this, Jesus says nothing. Not a single word. He was silent for the longest time. And I like to believe in those moments he remembered his earthly father, Joseph, and how he saved his mother. How Joseph did what was right instead of what was legally correct. He even scratched in the dirt while he was quiet. And then finally he spoke. He looked at all of them and he said, "Let any among you who is without sin cast the first stone." At which point the crowd was speechless. And one by one, they walked away. A chip off the old block. Thank you.